welcome to episode 2 of WEC. Today we're going to be discussing the topic of zombies. And I'm Kelly.
I'm Katie.
I'm Kevin.
I'm Mandy.
So right now, today, if you think about zombies, I'm assuming what comes to mind for most people is The Walking Dead.
Absolutely.
Without a doubt.
Even though I don't watch it.
Which I love. So, to get a starting point of where I'm at, I've watched all the episodes, and I read the comics up until they left the prison. Oh, and there may be spoilers in here.
I'm actually, you read exactly the same amount of the comics that I did. So I'm the exact same way. I've seen all the way up to last week. So I'm up to date. Today is going to be the new, whenever this episode goes up, I don't know what episode is going to be on, but I'm up to date.
And but there's more than just Walking Dead. There's that new TV show, iZombies, coming
out. iZombie, yeah. Which
and
I think
is based on?
I think it's based on either books or it's either
a comic.
It's a comic.
Yeah. A woman wrote a comic. It's called iZombie. I think there's 3 or 4 of them out, I don't think you can find them on the bookshelves. You gotta order them. But that was what I was going to talk about last week because it's Rob Thomas's new show.
He did this.
So the Veronica Mars guy is now doing iZombie, and it's premiering middle of March. And so there's lots of different zombie mythology, right? Okay, so I'm going to tell you Rob Thomas's zombie mythology.
Is there a different zombie mythology?
Absolutely. Yeah. No.
Well, like for instance,
so
in
it's
the
not like vampires
in the
where
Walking,
you can change it.
Like in the Walking Dead comic and TV show, they don't call them zombies; they call them walkers.
Additionally, in Walking Dead, everyone carries the whatever it is that makes you a zombie. So if you die, if I was to have a heart attack right now in that world, I would become a zombie. You don't have to be bitten. You don't have to be, scratched or whatever.
You just have to die.
Okay, so what's the Rob Thomas zombie mythology?
So the Rob Thomas... Okay, I don't know all of it because I'm not sure how she becomes a zombie, but I do know that as a zombie, she's walking around the world fairly normally, but she decides that if she's not going to shrivel up and become super zombie, dead-like, she needs to eat brains. So that's what she discovers, so she gets a job at a morgue. Yeah. And the interesting thing, twist that he's putting on the mythology is when you eat the brains, you take a little bit of the person's traits and the person's memories when you eat them. Totally unbelievable, but I'm okay with that. And
it works for me.
And so if she eats, so apparently in one episode she eats someone's brains, she's a total sociopath, she becomes a little sociopathic. So that's how she survives in this world as someone who people don't know is a zombie. She gets away with, she just is looked upon as a little odd. But she maintains some kind of normalcy by eating brains that allows her to be normal.
And I believe she also gets their memories, and she uses that to solve their murders, is what I had read somewhere as well.
Yes, exactly, because of course it's Rob Thomas, and he's the Veronica Mars mystery guy. So apparently, yes, when she finds out basically something about that person and memories and how that person dies, she is
so
led
every
to
week
want
it's
to solve
a new mystery then.
I believe so, yes. And I think there's also, just like in most of his other shows, there's this overarching storyline as well from episode 1 to the end.
Now, Walking Dead is more of like a survival soap opera, right? It's
correct.
Like one dramatic moment after the other.
And one of the most recent episodes, they finally did, if you listen to Robert Kirkman, who is the creator of The Walking Dead, he actually said The Walking Dead aren't the zombies. The Walking Dead are the people who are left behind. They're the survivors.
Oh.
And in a recent episode, Rick, who's the main character, called the survivors The Walking Dead.
Right. They were in a particularly low point. In fact, they were probably in the lowest point they've been in the entire show. And Rick has never been kind of the kind of character who is a speech maker or, like the head of the team. He's mostly like the sheriff, making sure everybody does their job. And he's respected, but sometimes he goes off the rails. But in this case, he knew that the group, which is now the largest group that I think the show on TV has ever seen, needed a pick-me-up. And so he told a story about his past, about a relative.
Grandfather.
And which I'm not going to really detail, but he tied this past, which he had never really revealed as a character until then, because you don't really know about Rick's past, except for, you know, he had a wife, and he has a son and daughter, and that's pretty much it. You don't know his history, and he revealed that in this moment to try and get the group to kind of buck up and get into survival mode again, because they were just maybe a few days from dying.
And what's interesting is the story starts, so you don't know in The Walking Dead how this outbreak happened. You don't know how the world, because the story starts when Rick wakes up from a coma. He was a sheriff, and he was shot. And his waking up from this coma is how you're introduced to the world. And when he wakes up, he's in a hospital, and it's empty.
Which I might add is almost identical to 28 Days Later.
Yes.
At the beginning of that movie, the main character, Cillian Murphy, also wakes up in a hospital, and he's walking around exactly like The Walking Dead opens.
There's an episode of Supernatural where he... basically, it's inside the head of somebody who's having a dream about a video game, and he wakes up in a hospital, and everyone's dead.
Oh. What's interesting, though, is a lot of people don't consider 28 Days Later a true zombie.
True.
Because they're not dead. Right, because they have a virus.
They have the rage virus. Uh-huh. And it's not the slow, lumbering zombie. It's the kind that races after you. Yeah. And it's that was really scary on a different level.
My experience with zombies, because I don't watch The Walking Dead, but my experience with zombies was when I was a kid and we watched Return of the Living Dead in the theaters. And I nearly died because the guy came through the ambulance scene. And I was like, oh, my God.
Well, and I think, like, I don't think those are viruses, isn't it? Like, one's like a meteor comes from outer space, and another one's a chemical type thing that turns them into zombies.
Yeah, the first actual zombie movie was the George Romero Night of the Living Dead.
Right.
And that, you didn't really know what it was, but I think there might have been a meteor thing. They kept on showing TV reports on the on the TV or reports on the radio about what was going on, but that movie was mostly contained in a house and, you know, trying to not defend the house from the invading zombies. But yeah, every movie seems to have their own kind of mythology a little bit.
Warm Bodies?
That was zombies. That was good. And actually, when they eat the brains, they get the memories. They don't get the personality traits, but they get the
memories. Oh, that's right.
Memories.
They get, like, snatches of the memories.
And so that's how... And I can't remember what his name is. It's a letter, because he can't remember his name. But it starts off with...
Oh, that's right, because he doesn't have his own memories
right,
anymore.
Right, and he's in an airport. And so you see, like, the ticket taker, zombie, just doing the same thing, repetitive motion of taking tickets like they did in life.
So that's the story where the zombies are, they're trying to incorporate them into modern, like, no.
He, by some reason, when he ate this brain of this guy who actually, I knew he committed suicide. I think it was via zombie, but he just had it. He ate this guy's brain, and then he saw the guy's girlfriend, and he started to have feelings for her. Because I'm pretty sure this was a young adult.
Oh, that's right.
Going for the Twilight audience.
Yeah, but in these stories, like, same with iZombie, people aren't running away and screaming and crying in fear from these guys, right?
Yes, they are.
Oh,
yes.
They are.
In fact, they have, like, a whole, like, strong, like safety place. And so she sneaks him in at one point in the movie, and tries to hide him because her dad is the head of their group. And if he sees him, he'll kill him.
Okay. But iZombie, they're incorporating. Do they know she's a zombie?
No. She lives a totally normal life. This is probably your most lightest side.
Yeah.
If you want to take
that's
extremes.
For me.
Yeah.
The romantic side of zombieism.
I like all sorts of zombie movies. I made a conscious decision not to watch Walking Dead because I saw those previews and they scared the crap out of me. And I couldn't watch it.
Oh, and it's gory too.
But I did see World War Z and...
Oh, I didn't see that.
And that, I loved that movie. And that did scare me.
No, because I read the book and I listened
I didn't read the book.
And
I
if you listen to
there's
a podcast that's audio, it's a condensed audio of that book. which is incredible. It's got all these really well-known actors doing it.
Yeah, it's like a docudrama.
Oh, what's it called? Is it called World War Z?
And the book is incredible. And then the movie has nothing to do with the book.
Okay, so I'm glad I hadn't read the book first, because I like to appreciate movies on their own, and I would have felt the same way if I had felt betrayed in that regard.
The book is a reporter going around reporting, like in the movie where Brad Pitt went. The guy is going the same places, but it's 10 years after this happened, so it's reporting history is what it is.
Right. It's actually an account. You're reading it as if it actually happened, and you're reading kind of like an after-action report or a non-fiction book account of what you already know but want to know more detail about.
Exactly.
Well, they couldn't probably make a movie about that, so they stuck it in the middle of it.
Because it's done like a non-fiction book. It's like, okay, one chapter is talking to one doctor and another chapter is talking to somebody completely on a different side of the planet. So they couldn't have possibly done it.
But there are some scenes in that book that would be so cinematic and so cool that they didn't do. Like with the crew that was on the submarine, and they had to have the people watching because they were climbing up. The zombies were under the ocean and they were crawling up the anchors and stuff. That would be so cinematic and so cool and so suspenseful, rather than the ant image you got where they're trying to climb the wall in that one part.
That was suspenseful to me.
On a different subject, because I have a problem with that, because I like certain books, and I'll take Harry Potter. We're talking about Harry Potter. The ending scene of the last book was so cinematic to me. I could see it in my head. I knew exactly how it was going to go. So I went into the movie and I expected that scene, and it wasn't there. They did it completely differently. It took all of the joy out of it because I so wanted to see that particular scene. So I know we're not talking about zombies anymore, but I get irritated when movies do exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I get irritated a lot of times when I read the books and then I see a movie.
That's why I don't. I know people always have the rule, I got to read the book first because I work at a bookstore, and people are always like, oh, well, I'm not going to see the movie, I have to read the book first. But I can't do that because I want to appreciate the movie. I can't appreciate the movie with that prior judgment. And what's interesting, all these reiterations of zombie things that we're talking about are all, so far, mostly, I don't know about the George Romero, based on books. The Warm Bodies, based on Isaac Marion's book, and Walking Dead, based on graphic novels, and iZombie, based on comic books, World War Z, based on a book. I Am Legend, which is, you could say, vampire zombies, one or the other, based on a book. By the way, another movie that a lot of people didn't like and think was scary that I loved and scared the crap out of me, also easily scared, thus not watching.
Well, I Am Legend. What is I Am Legend?
And it's a remake, too.
And the other thing.
And that's also a remake, yes.
But,
it's a remake. Will Smith.
There's a giant asterisk because the book is not about zombies. No. It's about vampires.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's why I said, vampire zombies, because it's really about a virus. So, and it just turns them into a certain kind. And they can't be out in the sun, thus the vampire mythology in there.
And also, I Am Legend was the second adaptation of that book. Right. The first was with Charlton Heston called Omega Man.
Yeah, that's correct.
Where it was closer to the book in the sense that the characters who were the vampires actually spoke. Where in I Am Legend, nobody spoke. None of the zombie creatures spoke. But in Omega Man, it was a loose adaptation of I Am Legend, and some say not a good one, but, I definitely would put I Am Legend in the zombie genre just because of that little tweak.
Yeah, and it's, man waking up not in a hospital alone, but in a city alone. I mean, that's how you're introduced to the world.
Do you know, I have not experienced such a rabid fan base about a zombie other than The Walking Dead. So I don't know what about Walking Dead makes it so different.
I think it's because you're not... It tells an in-depth story about the survivors. It's about the survivors. It's not about... I mean, it's what they have to face. It's what creates some of the drama. But I think more of the drama... I mean, in The Walking Dead, from my perspective, the people who are alive are a heck of a lot more scary than any zombie, because they're the shambling, unless you have a horde, you can outrun them, you can get rid of them. It's the living who are just messing with your mind, and you don't know who to trust, and the things that they do to people are far worse than getting bit.
Reminds me of The Stand.
I'll give you the stand, exactly.
That's a great
book. So I'll give you a scene from the previous episode. There are two women at the end of this one episode, not going to mention what's going on, but the two women staring at a sunset. It's a peaceful moment. Suddenly, a guy steps out, and he's got clean clothes. You have to understand that this group that we've been following have, I don't know, it's been two some odd years since the outbreak of this virus, and everyone's dirty, and they look like survivalists. This guy suddenly pops out, clean clothes.
Looks like he's out of an L.L. Bean catalog.
Yes. And he's like, hi, guys. And all of a sudden, the two women were like, start pointing guns at him. Because that's a threat.
And that's scarier than some shambling single zombie coming towards
him. And everybody who that's sees freaky. The show because knows that he's a threat. Not that he's a bad guy, but in previous episodes, in previous seasons, there have been nice people on the outside who were horrifically, you know, dangerous behind the veneer. And they've been kind of screwed over so many times, and people have been killed because of these kind of like false nice people. So it's like this pleasant moment at a sunset, and all of a sudden this perfectly normal looking guy in our life, in a survivalist mentality, these women were like, who the hell are you?
See, this is why I don't watch the show, because the L.L. Bean guy would have terrified me. Yeah. I would have
jumped out of his skin. Like I said, he's scarier than anything that's been
and
on
that,
the show.
And that was the end of the episode, because everybody watched that episode and were like, holy crap, who is this guy?
If you're me, so if you're the normal person, you're like, no spoilers, I don't want to know. Me, I immediately Google
to get the L.L. Bean guy.
No, well, I know what his name's going to be. But I would go in and I Google and I look at the wiki so I could see what he is in the comic. Because even though the comic and the show aren't exactly the same,
right,
there's enough similarities that you get an idea.
That's interesting.
Oof.
But I do have to say that it's really character driven. That's the major point. The zombies are kind of like what moves certain plots along. It's almost like
it provides the underlying tension.
It's mm-hmm. almost yeah, exactly. But the tension also comes from the other people, and the people they lost and the mistakes that they've made or you know, whatever. But really, you can kind of pluck this. This cast out of a zombie environment and put them in a different kind of survivalist environment, like a nuclear holocaust. Put them in a nuclear holocaust, no zombies, kind of the same show.
Or if you put them in something where terrorists are taking over a building, it's going to be the same thing. You're going to have the people, you have to have a leader, you're going to have who to trust, who not to trust.
Right.
You know, it's the same kind of thing, even if it's not the end of the world.
Okay.
And I think the other thing, at least from my perspective, is seeing Robert Kirkman in other stuff, he is such a dynamic person that when he describes it, it makes me want to stick with the story even more.
Yeah, he's very passionate about
very passionate, very
the
funny.
Story. And yeah, and when you try and dig information out of him, he's really funny at not giving you any information at all.
Yeah,
when he's on TV shows.
And my favorite quote of his, which I don't have the exact quote, but is he's been asked several times, if you were in a zombie apocalypse, what would you do?
Yes.
And he has repeatedly said that he will walk to a bridge and jump off of it and die right. as quickly as possible.
Because he said that he would not be able to survive this. No.
See, actually, this whole theme of what we're talking about, we could paint this the post-apocalyptic genre, because that's basically what the zombie story is, and that's what's so hugely popular right now.
Well, and like one of the things was like, on The Walking Dead, on the TV show, it drives me absolutely nuts. I realize they film in Georgia. I realize that they're supposed to be in Georgia, and it's hot. I get that. But if I am going to fight something that was human and is biting, I am not going to wear. I'm not going to be sleeveless.
Oh right, right.
And or wear a little tank top. I am wearing long sleeves. I'm wearing gloves. Perhaps a turtleneck. You know what I mean? It's like I look at them and I'm like, how dumb are you?
They have to look good.
Well, that's just it. You know, as little as possible. But oh my god,
as little as possible.
Yeah.
Well, I think the way they've tried to make it is that everybody is so capable of taking care of zombies with a knife or a hatchet or whatever that they don't need to worry about that. But then there, you get an episode like, I don't know, I don't want to give away spoilers, but there would be a character who would accidentally get bit on the arm. And that's, you know, what do you do with that? You either chop the arm off or you're gone.
Yeah, but think about the chick, and I can't remember what her name is, in the Daisy Dukes.
Daisy Dukes.
Dukes, the short
right,
shorts.
Right, right.
That, okay, first of all, there's chafing. I don't care. Second of all, she could get bit anywhere on her leg.
Are you talking about the younger Beth character?
No. The one that's sleeping with Abraham.
That's this is soap opera.
Oh, you're talking about the Hispanic girl.
Yeah.
I don't remember her name.
Yeah. Yeah, who knows her name? Because all she has is Daisy Dukes and no sleeves. And I think, I don't know if she has midriff showing, she may, but that's a lot of skin to bite. And if you're going through, if you think of it, when they're not on the road, when they're going through the forest, there could be something right there. You're not going to see it. She could be bit like that. That's dumb.
So you're saying the show is not realistic.
Well, no, I could see her wearing something like that. I'm just saying she wouldn't be alive still.
Well, I mean, do you expect everyone? Yeah, so the characters were in a prison, and when they cleared out the prison, they found all of these like full body armor stuff. And so characters would go around and clear out zombies wearing this full body armor. But quite honestly, who's going to walk around the Georgia heat wearing full body armor?
If I wanted to live, I would.
If you wanted to be comfortable.
You wear your Daisy. Oh, no, the chafing.
You wear Daisy.
The chafing, no. but, you know, but a long sleeve linen breathes. I'm just saying.
Well, if we're doing the post-apocalypse, there is, and we're morphing into that direction, which maybe we're not, but there is a movie coming up. One of my all-time favorite post-apocalyptic movies was Road Warrior.
Oh, yeah.
The second in the Mad Max series. I think the best of them all. But I don't know, you know the date that this movie's coming out, I'm sure. Is it this fall?
It's May.
Yeah,
it's May.
What's that's
May?
The one with Tom Hardy.
It's called Mad Max, isn't it?
It's called Mad Max Fury Road.
Yes, so I think they come back to the Road Warrior type of film, right?
Yes. Oh, and holy crap.
Yeah, but it's gonna be so gory.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't watch Walking Dead, there's no sense in it at all.
Mad Max Fury Road is shooting for an R rating. I think they might have already gotten it. But I already did my own podcast on this where I did a movie previews, and I mentioned this, and I said that there are two movies that a ton of people are looking forward to seeing: Avengers: Age of Ultron and the Star Wars movie.
Those are both me.
So,
oh, me too.
So, but if I had to pick those two, I'm probably looking forward to Star Wars more, just because I'm a Star Wars guy. But there isn't a movie I'm looking forward to anticipation-wise more than the Mad Max movie, because I love, just like you said, the Road Warrior so much. Oh, and I saw Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome in the theater, and even though it's not aged very well over the years, the Mad Max franchise overall is just...
No zombies. Well, but definitely post-apocalyptic.
Yeah. That's more like nuclear holocaust stuff.
You
but
never
the tra-
know, though,
the,
right? You never know what caused the issue.
No, I think in the first movie it's nuclear
They do mention...
Because in the first movie you're in the normal world.
They do have like an overall like series of scenes showing politicians arguing and the UN arguing. And I don't know if it's explicitly mentioned, but I think it's vaguely mentioned that there was a war.
Yeah. I gotta tell you, from my perspective, this isn't a popular perspective, but the only thing that I could recommend about those three movies was Mel Gibson in leather, because he was pretty and he looked good.
He was pretty.
Oh my God. Regardless of how he's turned out, not getting into that, but my goodness, was he pretty.
That's really the only thing I remember about Road Warrior is how attractive he was. Yeah. And also, there were so many scenes that I didn't like, because I have a problem with movies like this. and Walking Dead would be among them. I tend to empathize, so really the only soap opera I can watch and safely go about my day the next day is like General Hospital. So that's where I am.
And it's interesting about going back to Walking Dead. Even as dark and as bleak as it gets, I don't find it depressing. If we're talking post-apocalyptic and not zombies, I believe it's called The Road.
Yes. Oh. Now, holy crap.
That's the most depressing thing I have ever sat through in my entire life. Yeah. I wanted to kill myself at the end.
Had you read that book?
No, thank God.
I haven't read the book. I saw the movie, but the movie to me is like the bottom of the bleak scale. Walking Dead is maybe two levels above that. So it's bleak, but there's like a sliver of hope. The Road, no hope.
Oh,
what's interesting, The Road is now being Viggo Mortensen in high school for required reading.
Oh, that's right. Really?
Yes.
That's going to... Why would you do that to kids who have enough problems as it is? I mean, seriously.
No, I hear you.
The most memorable scene to me in that movie is when Viggo Mortensen is like under a waterfall or something and he's taking a shower. He's like cleaning off. And he is skeletal. I mean, he looks like someone who's from a concentration camp, skinny.
Right.
And that's where he's at. And I'm like, oh, it was awful. That was, I mean, there's so many other things, but that one is just so burned in your memory, like how bad things are, that this is what you're fighting, truly fighting to survive.
So and they don't offer an explanation for anything in that either, right?
No.
It's just the world we know just doesn't
exist.
Yeah,
it just picks up and we follow the characters.
Right, but something happened because everything's gray, so
yeah.
It led me to think that it was a nuclear type thing.
So have any of you guys played The Last of Us, the Naughty Dog version?
No, I've heard of it.
That's similar in terms of... Because I didn't play it, but my husband played it, and it's similar in terms of it being so bleak. Like, throughout the whole game. And I think that's zombies.
It's a video game?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Last of Us, I believe, is zombies.
And it's they're trying to find a cure. And the only thing that will cure it is blood from this one girl. And then I won't give away the ending, but it's tragic.
There's a TV show that's on Sci-Fi that it's zombies. And I can't think of what it's called. But there's one guy who survives a zombie attack. And they're trying to get him from New York to California, where there's supposedly someone that can synthesize it.
That's very similar to The Last of Us.
See, and I made it through one. But it's not called The Last of Us.
No, but the concept is
zombie,
very similar.
Z Nation. I think it's called Z Nation.
Okay.
Oh, that's recent, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really recent.
Okay.
Yeah, but I made it through one episode and went, oh, look, everyone gets eaten. And it was, the main character was, like in the first episode, and then he got eaten, was the guy who plays, I'm so bad. He was on Lost. He's on Constantine now, and he plays the angel on Constantine.
I know which
guy you're
talking about.
He was in Oz.
Oh, yeah.
Another soap opera.
Oh, my God.
Horrifying soap opera.
I love that show, though. That has nothing to do with Pokes.
That's no, where they were in jail, right?
That same actor was in the Matrix movies.
Yes.
He replaced Tank in the second and third Matrix movies.
Yes.
I really like him a lot. And
I'm finding out his name, so.
So while Mandy looks up the name.
I was going to try. Well, you guys were talking about iZombie. You were talking about how she eats the brains and she assimilates the personalities and memories. So there's a comic book. It's slightly different. I was going to bring it up, even though it doesn't have anything to do with zombies, but it's the same. It's called Chew. And it's basically about these detectives, or this one particular detective, and I can't think of what he's called. But basically, anything he eats, he immediately knows the entire history of that particular food. From its, when it was born, if it was alive, and every person it's encountered.
Wait, what is this again?
It's called Chew. It's a comic book.
And
he
worked with or has some affiliation with Kirkman because he thanks him in the comments. But it's very unique and it's very interesting because the only thing he can safely eat are beets. And so he like spends his whole life kind of eating beets until they realize that this is a superpower that he has. And then people start using him and he's a detective and it's fascinating. So that sounds similar in a different way. But he supposedly solves crimes and he does solve crimes. It's very interesting. It's called Chew.
That's really cool.
What's the name of the actor that we were talking about?
Harold Perrineau.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if I'm pronouncing his last name right, but
Oh, I can see him.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's seen a lot.
The best post-apocalyptic book ever is The Stand. Because that is... sir, I love Stephen King, but that's my favorite Stephen King book.
Yeah, I remember reading The Stand before the miniseries came out because my grandmother and my dad were reading it. And then... And it was... And they were so enjoying it. And then I started it and couldn't stop reading it.
Yeah.
And then the miniseries wasn't bad. It was really good. I think Gary Sinise was in it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Molly and Rob Lowe played the blind guy.
Yeah. And I thought that was an example of a good... If blind you're going to take a book
not
like
deaf.
That...
Deaf. He was deaf. Guy. Sorry. It's been a while since I...
Yeah, I don't remember the specifics of it, but it was so well written.
And it was one of... I think it's the first book where I ever, like, got emotional about a character, because his character's Nick, and when Nick died in that book, I started, like, dry heaving crying. I was so upset he died.
You know, there's talk of another miniseries of that.
I think the problem with that is it's such an in-depth story. I mean, when I was reading it, I was there, and I don't think it can be reproduced, because what's in my head is, I enjoyed it more than I could enjoy any film. I think that's a problem with a lot of books that go to movies, is the story in your head is just so much brighter and crystallized than anything you could possibly see.
If I may, I don't think most of Stephen King's horror books have been translated to movie very effectively. No. There's only one I can think of that I would actually recommend as a movie, and that's The Shining.
Shawshank Redemption.
That's not a horror movie. I'm talking about horror movies.
Well, Stephen King, right? Shawshank Redemption.
Yes. He also wrote a short story.
Yeah, short story. And also...
Stand by Me.
Stand by Me. The Green Mile.
See, if we're not talking horror... Then
they make horror movies campy. It's like, I think when they make a horror movie, like, one of the things, in my opinion, they do first is say, how much gore can we get because we need people in the seats versus the story. And Stephen King's stories are all about the characters in the story.
And if you're going to say The Shining, it's not, it wouldn't be Stephen King, because Stephen King hated that movie and it doesn't stick close to the book. It's Kubrick that you'd have to give the credit to.
Well, and that's who I do give the credit to, because that's an excellent movie.
I never saw that movie. It freaked me out with those two girls on the bikes. I was like, no.
Yeah,
but I wouldn't call The Stand a horror book.
No.
I think that's the only reason I read it, because I've never read any of his horror books.
Yeah, I actually read most of his more psychological novels, but this would be the drama. I actually read that in the 8th grade, I think, and it was before the expanded version. I actually never read the expanded version.
I've read them both. Would you consider Misery horror?
I would.
Yeah.
And that was an excellent movie.
That was.
I never saw that.
That was good.
He wrote Misery?
Yeah.
The guy in the bed is Stephen King.
I know nothing. We've established this.
I am just your what do you call it, interrogator.
There you go. That works.
But yeah, The Stand is I think I read it in 8th grade, like the first time I read it, and I just, that's the first time I think I ever started plotting, okay, now if the world should end, what would I do? And at that age, I was like, I would do this, this, and this, and at this age, I would be with Robert Kirkman on the bridge.
First one out.
I'm going to get my
Where is the bomb going to land? That's going straight there.
If there's zombies, I'm putting on a t-shirt, zombie chow, and just running right into the horde.
It's funny you mention that, because when I was during the Cold War, when actually missiles were a fear of ours, that was one of my plans, was to drive to downtown L.A.
Yeah.
And I was like, screw this.
Let me go first.
If it makes you feel better, our town would have been hit.
That's right.
Because of what's on the hill.
Oh,
we would have been hit.
Right.
Yeah.
For sure. All right.
Not revealing exactly where we're leaving.
So let's put it together. Something's on a hill. Let's go to LA. Go!
Go Google it.
That's too funny.
Okay, well, that's the end of episode 2, which started off on zombies and went.
So
in all the other directions off on the tangent.
I think we can all agree. Well, no, we all can't agree. But Mad Max: Fury Road is the most anticipated movie of the freaking year.
Star Wars, Avengers, Fast and Furious.
I will only see Mad Max if at one point he goes, hello. Just a Bane voice. Then I'm in.
Bane. My name is Mad Max.
This is when we need Kevin Smith. It's the only impression he does.
There you go. Well, thanks for listening. Talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in. We'd love to get your feedback on this week's episode. You can follow us by using the Twitter handle at WECPodcast. That's WEC with two Ks. Like us on our Facebook page by searching for the keyword WEC, or you can email us at WECPodcast@gmail.com. Bye for now.